This is Papa Smurf. You're listening to Our Lifestyle, the podcast with ODB and the Mayor.
Yo, it's Our Lifestyle, the podcast, you already know, and we're here with none other than Greg Miller from Custom Car Show Productions, also, of course, Scraping the Coast, and that's one of the premier shows in the country. What some of you may not know is Greg actually puts on numerous shows throughout the Gulf Coast region. You're going to learn a lot more about that on this podcast right here. But Greg, Scraping the Coast is just one of the shows that you put on. Can you give us a little heads up on the other three shows that you produce?
Yeah, man. We put on Sicknick. That's a show we put on in Gonzales, Louisiana. That's August 26th, 27th. We put on a camping show in Lumberton, Mississippi called Glamour Party. That one's November 3rd through the 5th. And our newest creation that me and Robbie Bryan have teamed up, that's Orange Beach Invasion. That is a hit, man. This past year was our first year, and it was a big hit. That show is at the Warp in Orange Beach, Alabama, March 16th through the 18th.
Awesome, man. And Airhead Nation, we're going to continue to promote these shows and give you all the insight to where these shows are, as Greg mentioned. But Greg, what's the advantage for showgoers to pre-register for your events, including, as you mentioned, Orange Beach Invasion, Scraping the Coast, Sicknick, and Slamber Party?
And save that almighty dollar, man. You know, if you pre-register, you can save, you know, money on pre-registration. It secures your spot at the car shows. Certain shows like Scraping the Coast, you also get free show shirts. We do giveaways if you pre-register. All the people who pre-register, they get entered into a drawing for our free air ride giveaway. We also do giveaways where, like on Scraping the Coast, we do a free ticket to the show. One lucky person will win two nights in a hotel, their free entry to the car show. We give them a $100 gas card, and we give them their free show shirt. So they don't come out of pocket nothing the entire weekend, except for their food. They have to buy their own food.
What? So OLP, Airhead Nation, we need you to go out there and pre-register for one of these shows. You cannot make an excuse for missing. You got one of four choices. Hopefully you'll make it to all four. Now, for anyone, Greg, that has never attended one of your shows, what is one thing that everyone should know about a Custom Car Show production, which you oversee?
And it's a family-oriented event. You know, we welcome every style of vehicle that's out there. We do not discriminate against anybody's vehicle. You know, we don't cut corners on our show. We pour our hearts and souls into each and every event. We do anything possible we can to provide the best show for the people. Our awards, everything with the show, all top-notch. We don't cut no corners.
Awesome. Well, you heard it right there from the man, Greg Miller. Now, OLP Nation, OLP Crew, I should say, we need you to go out there and follow Scraping the Coast on Instagram. This really includes turning on post notifications via the triple dots, as I always say, in the upper right-hand corner. Now, add these show dates to your iPhone or Android calendar and get ready for a kick-ass cruise. As we've said, details coming soon. Now, keep in mind that Scraping the Coast can be found really in all aspects of social media. Now, this doesn't just include Scraping the Coast. This includes, as I mentioned, Orange Beach Invasion, Scraping, Sicknick, and Slamber Party. But you can follow Scraping the Coast. It's Scraping the Coast Show on Instagram. Greg and team will be posting more there. You can also search Facebook for Scraping the Coast. Twitter, they're also there, by the way, Scraping the Coast. And then the website, super simple, scrapingthecoast.com. So OLP, Airhead Nation, we need you to really get behind us on this one, man. Greg is a huge supporter of the scene, and we support Greg. Greg, anything else for him?
Oh, man, we just, like I said, we're ready for a kick-ass year, dude, and we hope everybody comes out. Hope to see everybody at the shows.
We got your back, you got ours. We appreciate you, man. We out you. Peace.
Same here, buddy. We appreciate y'all. Yo, hot one, hot two, hot three, hot. Old dirty bastard, live and uncut. Styles unbreakable, shatterproof. To the young youth, you wanna get gunned? Shoot, blah! How you like me now? Don't fuck the
down, ruthless. Wow, do you want to get your teeth?
Yo, it's Our Lifestyle, the podcast, episode 39. Yes, you already know. For all the new listeners out there, thank you so much for tuning in. We certainly appreciate it. Please subscribe to this podcast. If you like anything custom automotive, trucks, airbags, customs, technology in general, you will love this podcast. So thank you so much for tuning in. This episode, no intro needed, Craig Frazier of Cal Concepts / Air Syndicate. He is the man, the myth, the legend, CraigFrazierStudios.com. It's Fraser Studios.com for those scoring at home. It's really, really, really a mind-blowing interview. It's about an hour and a half. You will certainly enjoy it. I've had to listen to it a couple times because there's so much gold. He could definitely bottle this stuff. You'll hear me say that and sell it because, man, Craig is not only a hustler, he's got his hands in so many different projects. Man, dude, it makes me want to step my game up. Old Dirty Ballard, you know how I do. Now, you just heard from Greg Miller. Much more to come on his lineup in terms of best-in-class shows throughout the country. We've had folks from California. We got the homie Juan, Low300C on Instagram. He's made the trek from Severn, Cali. You've had people all over the country come to these shows. There's no doubt you'll hear a lot more from Greg on why these shows are the best in the country. I like to call Scraping the Coast the unofficial East Coast SEMA. You know, that's my deal, man. So big ups to Greg Miller. Thank you for coming on and supporting us. Now, thanks for all the love, all the shares on episode 38. It was definitely a great episode. Lots of fun putting it together. Big ups to the guests. Man, we had a blast. Jameel really killed it, man. So thank you so much for coming on. If you're, as I said, a new listener, this is typically the time when Mike the Miggity Mayor, as I say, from Slamfest, it's usually when he and I will get together. But this episode has so much gold in it. There's really no reason for me to be talking or Mike and I to be talking because Craig Frazier is the man. It was such an honor to have him on, so you'll hear from him in just a moment. Now, episode 40 is coming up very soon. We're going to be at the Mini Truckin' Memorial Cruise this coming weekend in Orlando. So more to come. If you're in Florida, you already know this show is the place to be, not only for a good time hanging out with friends, but really to kind of pour out a little bit of that 40, if you got one, for all of our fallen mini truckers. So, you know, big ups to so many different names that have come and fallen over the years. It's definitely the place to be this weekend. So big ups. You're going to hear some audio from on site. This marks our 2-year anniversary. Our very first episode 2 years ago had our audio from the Mini Truckin' Memorial Cruise. So thanks to those guys, more to come. Now, as we get ready to roll into Craig from Cal Concepts, really / Air Syndicate. Few shout outs. You definitely want to follow Sparkles Detail on Instagram, on Facebook. Tim and Tanya, they continue to support us. We support them. You'll see them at shows definitely all across the East Coast and the Gulf Coast. Make sure you go by and go by the stand and buy some product. Grinder-TV.com. Make sure you go out, follow at Grinder_TV on Instagram. Make a purchase. Let Brian know that OLP sent you. You definitely want to copy DVDs/Blu-rays, all the stickers, the shirts, the hats. You will not go wrong supporting the Real Deal Holyfield. All Time Low magazine. Wow, that new cover with Nathan Coker's truck on it, that Ford Ranger. Wow, this is badass. 4 issues on average per year. You can go out, just Google All Time Low magazine. You'll land on their website. Make sure you subscribe. I think it's around $45. That includes shipping, and that's for all 4 episodes, all 4 issues. Slamfest show. So the homie Miggity Mike the Mayor, as I mentioned, he's actually laid back in the cut, working on Slamfest. Fast, doing his thing as he always does. Please go out there. Mike has finally stepped up his emoji game on Instagram. Yeah, I had to tell him what's up. Go out and follow Slamfest Show on Instagram, and you can search Facebook. Mike and the entire Mini Madness team, they're bringing Slamfest home to the Tampa Bay area. It's going to be an unbelievable show. I think it's number 26. And oh, by the way, they got voted into the Mini Truck Hall of Fame last year. Big ups to Mini Madness. Last but not least, our Facebook shout-outs. You got the Lowrider page, had the homie on before. The Bagged Board, or simply Bagged Board. And then you got Mini Truck and Where Are They Now? We recently had the big homie on. Make sure you support the Real. You know how we do. Real Deal Holyfield. Gotcha. We'll be right back. Yo, it's Our Lifestyle, the podcast. You already know. And we've got a special guest. We've got Craig from Cal Concepts / Air Syndicate. He is a legend in the game. I know he's not going to want me to say that, but Craig, man, how's it going? Thanks for coming on.
It's going good, man. You can use a legend term. Just don't use it on my wife. She'll just bust out laughing. So,
you know, that's so funny. We've had a lot of like what I call OGs on. You know, we had Sean Mahaney on recently, and I know like you guys on the West Coast really kind of go back. I mean, an awesome era. So we really have some cool questions for you, and we, like I said, we appreciate your time. But I wanted to really start off I wanted to start off with, you know, when I think of, you know, what you've done and your portfolio, you're an amazing, talented artist, but you just don't paint, you also draw. Can you give us a little background on how and when you got started into art? Like, was that at a very young age?
I was always drawing. As a young kid, my parents both are very artistic in their own way, different mediums, mostly oils and acrylics. And then, so I was always encouraged to draw. I never viewed it as a career choice. I always viewed it as something I was pretty good at. And when I was younger, I used to just decorate the cover of my Peachy in school to the point where I started actually selling custom painted or custom drawn out, sketched out Peachies. And my medium of choice was pen and ink. And I started doing colored pencils from that and then some of the different pens that came out at the time. But mostly never really thought of airbrushing, just viewed the as illustration techniques, and I never thought of it as something I could do for a living. I was always more interested in computer science and music at the time.
Oh, wow.
And there wasn't even a computer science major back then. Matter of fact, when I first went into Cal State in computer science, it was a math major with a computer science strength. And the first year I was there, we were working with punch cards. So that dates it back then, you know, learning the old, you know, Fortran 77 and COBOL and Pascal, but mostly on punch cards. So that was my introduction into college, was mostly computer science with a minor in music. And then went from there to aeronautical engineering at Letourneau College in Longview, Texas. Got my associate degree there, transferred to Cal Poly, where I got my bachelor's in architecture, and finished up my architecture degree at the University Independenza in Firenze, Italy. And so throughout that whole area, I never really took a class in art, but the irony is the way I put myself through college was pretty much by airbrushing, whether it be doing illustrations, renderings for magazines, doing work for professors, doing renderings for their books or their periodicals, and then even doing nightclub murals, wall murals, and even textile, you know, clothing design and stuff. Mm-hmm. When I was in Italy, I did a lot of nightclub painting and t-shirt design when I was over there. And when I came back, I continued doing it and was working as an architect and as a consultant for some different designers. And then at the same time, on the weekends, coming back to Bakersfield, where at that time my girlfriend lived, and started working with Cal Concepts with Dion. And just on the weekends. And that was back in 92 when I moved back to the United States. So that's really where people want to know where Air Syndicate started. It actually started in Italy because the guy I worked for would always make a joke about, he always referred to my company and myself as Sindicato di Aragrafo. He always would basically syndicate of airbrush syndicate because he always make jokes. There was no other airbrushers in the area. Cause we always made little jokes like, we got rid of them. But I took that, and Sindicato di Aragrafo just a little bit long, and airbrush syndicate sounded lame. And at that time, it was kind of funny because I just came up with the name Air Syndicate and also wrote down Syndicate Air, mm-hmm. and literally DBA'd both of them just in case. And it was literally a complete coincidence that their local car club in Bakersfield, because I wasn't living here at the time. Mm-hmm. I was living on the coast, but I would come here, and it was Syndicate Minis and Compacts. It just started about not much more than a year or two before that. I think these started in 1990, I think. And so I hooked up with Louie and all the guys over there with them and started doing their window designs. And by the time, you know, come 93, 94, 90% of all the vehicles that were Syndicate, Minis and Compacts, were done by me. So everyone would either make the assumption that it was my club or that I was just their airbrush artist. And it was kind of funny. And it worked out pretty good. I never complained about it, but I never actually was a member of Syndicate, but I pretty much painted all their stuff. And still, I would say probably some of the best hood murals. And there was not a club, even to this day, there's not a club that was as hardcore as those guys were when it came to just dominating shows. Even though they were only really around for a very brief amount of time, you know, less than really a decade. But hey, you know, some of the best things don't last that long. And that was, that's what they're all known for. You know, one of the last major cars in that club was, of course, the Last Look, you know, and people remember that one.
That is, man, I was trying to take some notes there, and mentally I'm living in the moment, and I'm like, wow, I mean, great history. And I mean, from a business owner and as an artist, wow, what a, like I said, a portfolio. You got a really an awesome resume, dude. I mean that, Craig. Now, Craig Frazier, you know, has given us a little bit of insight there into like the beginnings of Air Syndicate. So I think that's pretty cool. Now, you also have Craig Frazier Studios. It's Craig and then Fraser Studios.com. And it's really filled with paint tips, blog entries, events, and even items that, you know, that you, that customers can purchase. Did you ever, you know, think as a child growing up that you would, you know, you kind of alluded to it, but, you know, you're making a career and you're living off custom painting. I mean, how awesome is that?
No, it is. It works out really good for me because I don't like working. So, and I always say, you know, if you, you know, find something you love, you'll never work a day in your life, is what the adage is. And I tell a lot of my students that they really should focus, you know, even, you know, airbrushing is great. Art is great because it is a fantastic hobby. But at the same time, you can monetize this hobby. You know, in my opinion, the definition of the best hobby is one that you can monetize. Because usually you don't do hobbies because you hate them. You do them because you love them.
Right.
And many people, of course, don't want to make money for their hobby because they're going to kind of go that Bobby Jones route where they want to stay amateurish. They want to, you know, the love of the hobby. They don't want to ruin it with money. And I don't think it's money that ruins things. It's the way it's your perspective. What I do for a living is literally my living is my hobby and vice versa. I've had people say, well, if you're not painting, you know, when you're not painting, what do you do? I go, I paint. And they're like, yeah, but you got to have a break. I go, well, I paint my stuff.
Right.
You know, I don't paint your stuff. I don't have to talk to you. I don't answer my phone. I paint my things. I do my stuff. I really don't have any, I mean, you know, the other activities I do besides drawing, painting, tattooing, it's always tied in with something, whether it be interior design, it'd be murals, somehow painting, just sketching, logo designs, product development. I do a lot of product design work, which is great because it gets my, that engineering background I had. It really finds a use for that. And I did have, I still do have a lot of love for engineering and especially reverse engineering or concept design and innovation. So I'll work with companies on existing products and make them better, or I'll come up with an idea I can develop to another company. That's probably the only thing I do that's not, comes down to drawing, but I approach it in the same way. I approach it in the same creative way. I also work with companies on developing productivity. Like I'll work with a company I've worked in the past with Trek, and I worked with them on developing a way that they could create a custom paint job on their assembly line that looked like it was hand done.
Wow.
And yeah, it was, but it was done on their assembly line. I've also worked with Harley Davidson through a company called Platinum One over here on the West Coast that does a lot of their custom paint work. And I worked with them the exact same way, kind of, reverse engineering some custom paint jobs, but making them so they were what we could call limited edition custom or limited production. So we take advantage of the custom look, the custom quality, yet the production ability so that these remain cost effective.
Wow.
And that's something I like to do. Now, me personally, I don't like doing production. I don't, some people think that seeing like 50, you know, sets of tanks or 50 guitars hanging up, getting ready to be painted the same is like Nirvana. That for me is a living hell. I'm not into that. Now I love helping someone else with it. You know, it's like, I will come up with ways of doing it. But one of my clients for the last 15, 20 years is Fender Guitars. And I do a lot of work for Fender, Jackson and Charvel, mostly Jackson. And I do guitars for them every year at NAMM. Matter of fact, I've got a booth at NAMM the last 2 years. So this upcoming year, I'll have one there too. And we focus on that booth on the paint work I do on the guitars and even on drums, as well as the materials, the paint that I use. I actually work with a company. I develop the paint. And then also the spray guns and the systems that we use is a company I work with called Iwata. And I work with them on, I don't really invent airbrushes, but I'll work with them on developing better airbrushes or fine-tuning the ones they have and to what's best for this industry. And then at the paint company I work with is Createx. I also work with House of Color and a number of other companies, but the one I develop actual products with is Createx lately.
Wow.
So that's another thing I do on the side. But it is all tied in with the artwork. But if you ask me when I was a kid what I wanted to do, I just wanted to, you know, when I was a kid, I wanted to be James Bond, and I wanted to be Captain Kirk, and I wanted to, you know, the stuff I watched on TV. I wanted to be Rod Serling. I mean, I was a weird kid, but I never really had a specific goal, and I never, and it's really funny, I never thought of airbrushing or artwork. Well, I didn't start airbrushing until the 80s, but I didn't think of artwork as a career. And the reason I didn't think of it that way is not because I didn't believe in my ability of it. It just didn't seem like what work was taught to me to be.
Gotcha.
Work was something you had to punch in, you had to go do, you had to train for. It wasn't fun. You could be passionate about it, but it was something you had to do, and you finished on Friday and started again on Monday.
Gotcha.
And if you think about, you know, I'm 52 years old, my age, that is the tail end of that ethic, where, you know, things have changed drastically because of the internet and the way people view work. But that's just, you know, that's just something that you have to, like, you know, it's every era is different, you know, every age is different, you know, everyone's gonna look at their work at it differently. And so with me, I never really thought it was. Now kids nowadays can really do anything.
Yeah,
my son, I always think, man, my son's so much more imaginative than I was. It's not that he's more imaginative, it's that he's got more opportunities. And because of that, whenever you have more choices, you will become more creative. So I think of myself as, you know, I've had people say, oh my God, you're really creative. And that's a compliment. I take it very, but I also work very hard at it. And I think of myself, man, if I was my son's age right now. And I think everyone does that to an extent. You know, man, I wish I knew what I knew then.
Yes.
You know, now, back then.
Yes.
I would take much more advantage of it. But, you know, I think right now that people always are saying, yeah, the opportunities aren't there today. No, they are. They're so, the internet, though it, you could say bad things about it, it is really increased the choices and opportunities for creativity beyond anyone's scope of imagination.
Yeah, well, my mind is blown right now, because when I think of how, you know, I always refer to it as hustling, man. When you're out there hustling, you're working hard. Today is actually the 19th anniversary. I've worked at the same company since I graduated high school. And, you know, I think about,
wow,
you know, you go out there and you hustle. And but for you, you've really been able to kind of basically put your hands in a lot of different pots, you know, and that's a good thing, because you haven't backed yourself.
No, it's necessary.
Into a wall, you know?
No, it's necessary. One of the things that people, I had recently, someone was asking me what my core values were.
Mm-hmm.
And it was an interesting discussion we had on core values. And I said, well, one of them is integrity and loyalty and continuity and creativity and innovation. But one of the ones I pointed out was diversity. And the diversity thing is having, you know, there's that old adage, you should always have, don't put all your eggs in one basket. I mean, that's a good, whether you're a stockbroker or a custom painter,
uh-huh,
that's a good thing to keep in mind, because, there may be one thing that's hot and heavy, you know, but it's not going to be that way forever. And when I mention, I go, hey, just prepare. And they're like, why? I go, well, everything eventually goes south. It's, you know, it's apathy. It's the law of apathy. It's the way things happen. Things have a lifespan. You know, some things live longer than others. Some things go a long time. You know, there's trends and there's fads, and then there's things that are like classical elements of design that last forever. But when it comes to being a painter, if you only focus on one thing, you better hope that lasts, and the odds are it won't. So you always want to have more baskets and more, you know, divvy up your eggs amongst those baskets. So I've always done that naturally. Not, you know, for two reasons. One of them, I don't trust any one thing to last long enough. And secondly, I've got a serious attention span issue. I there's not one thing I want to do over and over again. So I love it when things disappear or not become as popular, because it's sometimes, usually it's coincidentally when I'm tired of them also. So
that's,
I'm always
so
looking,
smart.
You know, when I find something that's really cool, or I think it's cool, sometimes I think it's cool and no one else does, and then that's just mine. It's not for the public. But sometimes I come up with something that the industry really digs and it takes off and does really well. And I'm stoked on it. But at that point, I don't really keep on working it to perfect it. I'll go on to do something else and let the industry work on that. There's people out there that their goal, their true talent is to take ideas and make them really work. You know, Alexander Graham Bell didn't design the best phone. He just invented it. He was the first one to get it out there. The same thing when it comes down to Edison, you know, the best, you know, the best light bulb wasn't necessarily his. It was just the first. So very rarely do you find innovative, you know, creative individuals are usually not the ones that also develop the most efficient or the most productive worthy product. And that's fine. That's a completely different talent. So that's why I have no problem when people say, oh, this guy's one of your students and he's doing that better than you. I'm like, good. I have a lot of students that in many respects are much better at me at things I taught them. Well, and people think that's strange. I go, not really. Most football coaches can't keep up with any of their athletes.
Yes.
But those athletes sure the heck listen to their coach. And I view it in the same kind of respect and same kind of way. There's things that I take a lot of pride in being good at. And that has nothing to do with what other people think. That's just to do with me. So when I always tell people with diversity, I go, it's a form of self-preservation. And it'll save you from, you know, having all your money on the table for one thing and then you lose it when it's not popular anymore. But it also will save your sanity because as an artist, you always hear about people with mental blocks or writers with writing blocks.
Uh-huh.
All those come down to is writing block or mental block is a form of self-boredom. You've gotten to the point, it's like a repetitive stress injury of your brain. And you've done the same thing over and over again to the point where you're not challenging yourself anymore. And there all of a sudden you don't know what to do anymore because you've been doing the same thing over and over again. And, you know, you're supposed, as an artist, you're not supposed to be comfortable. You're supposed to be literally on the edge, constantly worrying and wondering if you're going to screw up. Oh, will this thing not be as good as the last one? That's the whole key. People want to get to the point. Many say, well, I just want to get to the point where I'm comfortable and sitting there and holding court and I'm just the man. I'm like, yeah, that's not going to happen. And if it does, for me, that's a living hell.
Right.
I want to be challenged by the next best thing. The newest thing out there, not leading edge for everyone else, but something that just attracts my attention.
Yeah,
a good example is, well, you saw Craig Fraser Studios.
Yes.
Was created only about, I think, 3 years ago I put it together. And I did it with the idea of going more towards the fine art industry and doing more prints. And I also started showing at some conventions, started going to some Comic-Cons. And I started doing what's called the Monster Paloozas, which are these like monster horror effects conventions.
Uh-huh.
Because of that, that hooked me up directly with the studios. And now I'm working with Alchemy is a studio in Burbank I work with. It's owned by Glenn Hetrick and Neville Page. You're kind of known for Face Off, the show on TV. But what we're working on right now is a Star Trek Discovery. And I do work with them on some of the paintwork and some of the behind the scenes set things that whether it be Klingons or something else. So some of the stuff I do with them, but I'm also working in the studio industry on developing new products, paint and techniques for them.
Wow.
And that ranges from not just Alchemy, but also Disney and some other things. So you can look at all this stuff. People say, well, so you're not doing Matrix anymore? I'm like, oh, sure. We just did one not too long ago. We've got one in our shop right
yes.
now. So, you know, I'm doing that at the same time. So I never stopped. That's the one thing is there's nothing I ever did that I stopped. I just might not do as much of. And I might not be doing as many. Like with mini trucks, I don't do as much windows as I used to. It doesn't mean I stopped painting the mini trucks.
Right.
You know, and we don't have as many of the two-tones as we used to. Most of the stuff we're doing now, it's getting back to some of the crazy graphics. So we kind of sit back and just watch it. But even our shop, you know, with me and Dion, and he's the one that owns Cal Concepts, we always see trends that change around. You know, we're also the official painter in town for Harley-Davidson. We do all the repairs, but also all the custom work for the local Harley-Davidson dealership.
Mm-hmm.
And so that kind of stuff that we're working with, those are the different eggs in the basket between me and Dion. We'll work on different product development. Dion works with me on developing some paint for the automotive industry. And that's a different basket that he's got some of his eggs in. So you always want to be diversified. You know, I can't emphasize that enough. That's probably the biggest secret that shouldn't be a secret in any creative industry.
Yeah, and I thought, you know, I'm a very positive person. I love reading and just, you know, learning new things. But it's like when I talk with you, Craig, I'm like, dude, man, I want you to be my life coach, man. This is just awesome. Because I'm telling you, I'm just like blown away. I mean, it's really cool. Now to go back, I know you mentioned James Bond. I think if Ian Fleming was still alive, he'd be reading your books, man. I mean, because it's just, dude, it's really cool. So now
That's like way over the top compliment. I've always been a huge Ian Fleming fan, whether it be the James Bond or even it was funny, as a young kid, I didn't even know Ian Fleming wrote Chitty Chitty Bang Bang, but I love Chitty Chitty Bang Bang as much as I loved James Bond. So,
yes.
I appreciate that. That's a very, very cool compliment you said there.
Yeah, no problem. There was actually, I watch a lot of, you know, different, different shows on Discovery and stuff. And there was one, I forget if it was on TLC or if it was on History, but there was a pretty cool like hour or two segment that they aired the last couple years. And I'll have to look it up if you haven't seen it, but it shows how he lived and maybe what was going on in his mind. And it was really cool, man, because I really I'm a huge fan. I don't own them all, but I'm a huge fan of the 007 series. And it's amazing that his work has lasted this long, you know?
Well, if you think about it, the reason, and you can really figure out why it's lasted that long. It's not that difficult because even though the stuff he wrote was fantastic, I mean, some of it was ridiculous, but it was based in reality. You have to realize Ian Fleming did work for the British Secret Service.
True, and that's so what I learned during that. That's a good point.
He was legit. You know, he was actually legit in there. You know, there's a reason that Kevin Costner always goes back to baseball movies whenever something else doesn't work out as good, and why his baseball movies are the ones truly beloved by
them,
because he used to play baseball. So when you truly know something, you don't have to act. When you truly know something, you've got a little bit of an edge. I use that even when I'm doing murals and when I'm doing artwork. I'll do research. Like I'm doing, I recently, just last year, or a little over a year ago, I got signed by Disney. So I'm a licensed artist for Disney, but I'm also licensed for Acme, and which means I'm an artist for Lucasfilm. I just finished doing a piece called Bounty on Bespin. That's based on, it's Boba Fett, you know, kind of chasing the Millennium Falcon to Bespin from The Empire Strikes Back. And anyone that's interested in seeing that, you can go check out Acme Archives online and just type in Bounty on Bespin or my name, Craig Fraser, and you can see the piece. It's available online. The reason I brought that up is I actually do research on these, where I'm doing not just research on watching the movies, but I'll actually do research on the ship design and who designed it and some stuff that didn't make the cuts in the movies. Mm-hmm. And at the same time with Disney, I just recently did a piece, 50th anniversary of Pirates of the Caribbean. And I did a lot of research on the original stuff that was in the Pirates of the Caribbean, the attraction, when I did the painting. You always want to do the extra research. When I did my murals on cars back in the day, people would make comments on all these little details you'd see for years later. I'm like, there is a lot of stuff that I do research on, and I'll hide in the murals. And part of it is, of course, to add interest to it, to the mural. But a lot of it is for myself, because I won't be interested. It takes me a while in some murals, and if I get bored halfway through, you'll see it. So I got to keep interest, so I always keep on adding things in.
That's awesome.
And, I used to, there's a magazine, it's called, I think it's called High Life Magazine. And or Highlights, not High Life. That's a High Life's a different magazine.
Yeah, I was going to say, wait a minute.
No, I was going to say, not every dentist office has High Life magazine. Right. No, Highlights magazine is the magazine in the dentist office. And on the back of the magazine is the, you know, the find the bunny, find the comb, find the egg picture. And there's always some brat kid ruins it by using a ballpoint pen. But there's always, you have to look in the painting to find all the hidden stuff. As a kid, that was my favorite thing in the world, was that
about
pictures. And as I grew up, I also started noticing some of the work by Zap Comics, the Cheap Thrills posters, all this cool stuff that came out of the Grateful Dead and came out of like the studios that the Zap Comics had that I then researched and found out that Zap Comics got its origins mostly from Ed Roth and his studios back in the day, and Robert Williams, who was the art director, and then as I followed the stuff I liked, I followed those influences and then was able to mimic that. And so I started hiding things in my murals. And whether it be just my name and my company, or I would hide something about the owner in there. And sometimes I'd let them know, sometimes I wouldn't let them know. But it was always stuff that people years later would say, oh, I was looking at that mural, I never noticed this before. And that's cool when you have a person that's talking about a mural that you painted 20 years ago.
Yes.
That you noticed something in. It's even better when it's the guy that paid for it 20 years ago and just owned it that long, and he finally noticed something in it. So it's kind of that's where it all came from. People always thought I was doing it just to be funny, or I was doing it to be a jerk, or just to, you know, kind of as a gimmick. No, anytime you invest in learning or researching a subject, it will always be better for it. So
yes,
it's a no-brainer. That's the one thing I know for a fact not as many airbrush artists do as I do. And that's because it's, they don't think it is fun. Honestly, for me, the research is just as, and that probably came from college, you know, having to do a lot of term papers. I do a lot of research. You get to the point where if you have to do something, you find a way of liking it. So I would make it almost like the research became like an investigation. It became a game.
That's
and so I'm always
awesome.
trying to find that one bit of knowledge. You know, when I do a demonstration, then I do live demos at Disneyland when I'm airbrushing. And I did one recently on the Tiki Room. And I really quick was reading up on a bunch of stuff and a bunch of history on the Tiki Room. And it was great for the people there, but what was cool was that some of the cast members that knew this stuff were actually listening in and later were like, I didn't know that. And so wow. If I got a cast member from Disneyland that I'm telling them stuff about Walt Disney and the Tiki Room from the 50s that they didn't know, then I won.
Yeah,
that's the ultimate. Yeah,
that's cool.
And I get a kick in that because it's not, you know, with art, it's, you know, especially with Disney, it's not just the painting. It's the presentation. It's the wrapping. It's the painting. It's the story. It's the person. It's
yes.
the bio.
Well, here's...
Walt built it all on that. It wasn't just one thing. It was everything. It's a lifestyle.
Yes, and one thing I was going to mention, because like I said, I'm really thoroughly enjoying this interview. A few years ago...
Oh,
and yeah, man, thank you. And a couple years ago, I remember, and I just Googled it. So did you hear a few years ago, Andy Warhol, they had found like a floppy disk, and it had some early 80s, like it was computer... generated art, basically. But
yeah.
They had to get someone to almost not decode it, but it was, you know, think about it. You don't have a floppy drive, you know, just sitting around, but they were able to pull that off. And it's just amazing when you think about like digital archaeology almost, right? I mean, imagine Indiana Jones in today's environment. But it's really neat because to your point, it's like maybe he did that thinking, man, would someone unlock this like 30, 40, 50 years later, you know, or however many years, you know?
Warhol was an interesting dude. The problem is that it depends on how you study them. If you studied his artwork, if you studied his history, you talk about Warhol, and most people just know him from Basquiat, the movie, you know, or what little they've seen in pop culture.
Uh-huh.
And he was ahead of his time on quite a few things. You could argue the quality of the artwork. That's subjective. If you don't like his work, that doesn't mean he's not an artist. People didn't like cubism. Doesn't mean Picasso wasn't good. But with Warhol, he would always, he never really could quite be sure, because he was the kind of person who would do some really weird things. And one of them would just really take off. And you'd be like, he meant that. And of course he meant that, but he also meant all the other things too that didn't take off. So the fact that, you know, years after he's gone, they're still digging up and finding new things. And I mean, heck, they just found out that Alice Cooper had a Andy Warhol rolled up in a tube that he didn't know he even had for the last 30 years.
Wow, that is insane.
It was just a poster, but it was a really rare poster. And the only reason he got it is his girlfriend purchased it because Cooper used to use electric chair on stage, and it was an electric chair that Warhol did a limited number of prints on. And it was a print. It was a print that went for like, I think it went for like $250 or something, or $2,500 back then, and which is a lot in the 70s. But it just got valued at over $1 million.
Oh, I've seen it on Rolling Stone website. Yeah, and it's talking about it was in a classic storage locker. Oh, yeah, the Andy Warhol classic
storage locker. Yeah. And then the best part is Cooper's like, that's too nice to put in my house. And so he put it back in the storage locker. that's killer.
Dude, that is insane. Well, so as we transition like into the automotive stuff, because, I mean, this is awesome. But when the listener, so like a lot of people know, hey, Craig Frazier, I know because in the mid-90s, late-90s, I start reading Mini Truck, and we start seeing these unbelievable trucks, and really, they go down in history. A lot of them have, but can we start first, like with Air Syndicate and Cal Concepts? You kind of alluded to these different companies, but what's the difference between these two?
Well, Air Syndicate's my company, and I've had different people off and on. There's some names you may remember. you probably heard of a guy named Steve Van Diemen. And a great painter. He's probably had more truck covers in Truckin' Magazine than any other artist out there. And he actually was one of my first employees, one of my first students, actually. And I've had different people off and on that have worked for me with Air Syndicate, but pretty much just me. It's just, I call it Air Syndicate Studios. It sounds like it's this huge place. It's just wherever I'm at, it's Air Syndicate.
Uh-huh.
And I separated it just to make Air Syndicate's more of my automotive stuff. You won't see Air Syndicate doing any any murals in nightclubs or doing any restaurant design or anything or doing any tattoos. That's different. Air Syndicate was my automotive. So I created Air Syndicate as my company name when I started working with Dion, because I wasn't, I started working at Cal Concepts. Dion's like, well, you're going to need to have your own company name. And I had a company called Fraser Graphics at the time that I was going to restart up again. I kind of let lapse when I moved to Italy. And I said, yeah, I'm going to do something different. That's when I started. I actually licensed Air Syndicate here in the United States, because I'd already been using the name. And that's just me. That's whatever I'm going to or whatever group I have working with me. If I have three or four artists working with me, then we're all Air Syndicate. But Cal Concepts a little bit differently. Dion started Cal Concepts. He purchased Curtis Craft. Boat is a boat racing company, and Curtis Craft Racing, from his stepfather Arlen Curtis.
Okay.
Back in 1986. Okay. Now Curtis Craft Racing started in the 30s from Frank Curtis, who was the most winningest IndyCar builder of all time. Actually, even more than Ferrari and Lotus and those other companies. If you look back at Curtis, that's Curtis with a K, Curtis Craft with K, okay. Both with Ks. That's also why Cal Concepts both has Ks. That's a little bit of an homage to Curtis Craft. Now, Curtis Craft still exists. Cal Concepts is a DBA. It's Curtis Craft DBA doing business as Cal Concepts. So Curtis Craft has never been closed since 1930-something or other, whenever. I can't remember what the exact date. It was in the 30s when Frank started it. So by definition, Cal Concepts doing business as, or Curtis Craft doing business as Cal Concepts, is the oldest custom paint and customizing company, because they did their own paintwork. Because they did race car building back then and sprint cars, and then later in the 60s and 70s, boats. And he's also, because Frank's father was a blacksmith that actually, a wheelwright that started working for Henry Ford, Dion is the fourth generation car customizer, a car builder in the company. And so probably the longest open, the longest business that's never had its doors shut would be Cal Concepts, of course, the original name, Curtis Craft. And I always thought that was kind of cool.
That is awesome.
I remember Dion didn't even really realize that until we were talking about it years ago. And I go, wait a second, did Curtis Craft ever shut stores? He goes, no. And I go, yeah, then guess what? You still kept the name. Because you didn't get rid of it. He unincorporated it, but he kept the name, so it's still there.
That's crazy, man. I appreciate that insight. Now, when you mentioned, was it Steve Demon, right?
Steve Van Demon, yeah.
Okay, now I'm trying to
He's known for his flames on a lot of trucks and stuff.
Yes. Now, I don't have the truck sitting next to me, but I mentioned we had Sean Mahaney on. Didn't he paint crew mm-hmm. cut the dually for MIC? I think he did. It was green and purple.
Right. Rob Maggi, I think Rob Maggi, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, he did. He's the one that did that one, yeah.
Yeah, because I designed the steering wheel,
and he did the flame job.
That is awesome, and it's cool because I mean, Sean, when we had him on, it's one of our most downloaded and listened episodes. I mean, people were really intrigued, and we had a great conversation. But I always remember on the back lower right, it had like the purple. It almost looked like a bumper sticker, but it said his name on it, and that's pretty cool. So I'll have to look back with all my truck and magazines and look at other paint jobs that he had his name tied to, because you mentioned that there's a lot of them. So that's cool, man.
In my opinion, I mean, I believe he probably. I mean, we've had Cal Concepts, Air Syndicate. We've had more than 70 covers, and that's a lot.
Yes,
Dion knows the number better than I do, but since we started together in 92, we've got 70 covers. Not all in trucking, of course.
Sure.
That's in other magazines as well as in other countries. But not just that, over 350 features that I personally have written, step-by-steps for Airbus Action Magazine, trucking, mini trucking, lowrider, hot rod, different companies, Drive Magazine, Cal Magazines overseas, Chrome and Flame over in Germany. And then also I got three books out that were the
I remember seeing those.
Cheap Tricks. Yeah, Cheap Tricks and Special Effects 1 and 2, and then Pinstriping Masters is a book I ghost wrote for Airbrush Action Magazine. And then also have about 25 DVDs out there that on instructional. Most of them are available now. You can get them online. They're actually been kind of released online free. And then there's a number of them. I still do videos, but now they're not DVDs. Now they're direct downloads through a company called Coast Airbrush. It's called Coast Airbrush TV. And I have probably about a half dozen videos on airbrushing and different techniques available on there. And then I also have a couple of videos available through the Stan Winston School, which is Stan Winston is one of the great special effects schools or studios in the movie industry. And I've got a couple of videos direct download through their school. And so that's, you know, there's a lot of different opportunities for that. But the reason I bring this stuff out, we didn't custom paint and were involved with the magazine solely for the covers. That was a byproduct.
A lot of
people would say, oh, I want to be on the cover. I'm like, well, that's easy. Be on the cover. You can do it politically. You can finagle your way in, or you can earn it. Be on the cover is not that big a deal. But remember, it is a big deal, but it's not. It is something that this today's cover is tomorrow's on the bottom of tomorrow's cat box. You might not, this industry is very about what have you done for me lately.
Exactly.
So when people always say, my goal is to be on the cover, I go, then you're going to either be really disappointed when you are, because when you could be on another cover.
Yeah,
I never really focused on the covers. They were always a byproduct. It was like, well, if you do your job, you'll be on the cover. And if your job is to do, what our job was to be leading edge creative custom painters. We did not follow the trends. We would use parts and bits of trends here and there, but we were known for leading the edge. And it was just people say, well, how do you always figure out what's going to be the latest, hottest thing? I go, well, we would do something and then tell everyone it's the latest, hottest thing. And they're like, and they're laughing.
That's sick.
They're like, it doesn't work that easy. I go, yeah, it does. Especially if you're writing articles.
Yeah.
And if no one can guarantee a cover of a magazine. And I never could, to get a cover. But the thing is that I had better odds of getting the cover, because if I'm working for a magazine, and all of a sudden, I had to sat with a couple of times, a truck and a mini truck and some other magazines, especially Airbrush Action or Auto Graphics magazine, where I'm already writing for them. I've been writing for them steadily for a while. And they're like, hey, we need something. Something fell through. This didn't work out. We need something. We're at the last minute. I'm like, I go, hey, here you go. Because I also did all my own photography back then. So I'd always had something in the wings. And because I wrote for so many magazines, I always had one or two articles in the can that I could modify depending on the demographic of the magazine I was working for.
Exactly.
I had this one magazine article that it was meant for this magazine, but I could tweak it up and put it into mini trucking too. So being involved in that. Now, did I do that as a grand scheme? No. I liked the people at mini trucking. I liked working with Lance. I liked working with, you know, Courtney and Stillwell and all these people in the magazine. These are people that I would see at car shows. And I got to know in a professional way, personal way. And I really, Sean Carlson and all these, great names and icons in the industry that I got to meet on a personal basis, but I also work with them professionally. And when you do that, it's like the lifestyle thing I talked about earlier. If you make something your lifestyle where every aspect you're covering, then you can't help but do well. You can't help but be creative. You can't help but be immersed in the full aspect of it. If you just dabble in it, if you punch the clock and you end at 5 and you stop on Friday and start up again on Monday, you'll never get it.
That's,
and you shouldn't.
So true. Yeah, and like you said, immerse. So, you have to immerse yourself in something. If you truly love it, like you said, and you've kind of painted that picture, so to speak, pun intended. So I was going to ask you, I met you last year at SEMA and you were super nice guy and you said, hey, yeah, no problem, I'll come on. And I know it's taken some time, but we made it happen. When I think of Cal Concepts and your company Air Syndicate, I think of like Cal Concepts. They've painted so many classic trucks, many trucks over the years. But can you tell us a little bit, what was the environment in the shop, even though you guys are still doing it, but what was it like back in the 90s painting some of these iconic trucks?
Well, it was cool. It was fun. People, it wasn't like if we did a television show, it wouldn't, like Fast and Furious, nothing is like that. when you look at people would love to think that we just had all these lifts in the shop with like 20 cars that you would just like, I recognize that one, I recognize that one. No, it's not like that at all. We working on an iconic truck. I mean, Last Look was a shop truck. It started out as this truck that we rescued from this tweaker that I swore this body drops using batteries and coat hangers, some of the worst work we've ever seen done. And we rescued it from this place where it was just torn apart, didn't make any sense. It was actually a friend of ours' truck that he had sold to this people. We bought it back from. We were going to just make it into a shop truck.
Uh-huh.
And Dion got it all cleaned up and fixed up, and we did a body drop on it. And at that time, It was, matter of fact, if you go back early enough, you'll see a couple of issues before The Last Look, or quite a while before The Last Look debuted, there is an article on Sean Carlson, and I can't remember the name of his company at the time, because he had two different, he had New Forms, and there's the other company he had. I'm brain farting.
I know what you're talking about.
But he hit us up, and he had some idea. He had an idea for creating a airbag kit for mini trucks. And
yes.
He wanted to experiment with Dion's truck. And we had the truck just sitting there with a little – we had it sitting there with a C-notch. It was no big deal.
Okay.
So, no, actually, it did have a monster notch. It was a horrible monster. So we had cut the whole back of the truck off already, and we had an old C-notch one. So we redid the notch on it, and we worked with Sean on it. And Sean came up with it. And the basis of that became, I can't remember if that was the kit that MIC started selling or something. Someone started selling that kit, and Sean sold it to him. Like the basic, just the templates for the,
yeah, it may have been FBI,
the bag hangers. The bag hangers.
Yep.
It was definitely before MIC, but it was another company. I remember Sean was doing it from his company, and then I think he sold the templates. But that was the original thing. And then all of a sudden we had this, like, the first officially fully airbag body drop mini, and that was done, you know, with this kit. And so we do something else with it. So we started messing around, and it was kind of funny. We never had any intention of doing it the way it looked. We were making jokes about, I don't know if you heard of a company called Chisholm Suspension back in the day.
Yes, I have.
And they actually put a full size truck on a Corvette NASCAR chassis, and they took it out in the early 90s. And they ran it as a pace car. Everyone just laughed their butts off. But it was like, and then all of a sudden someone's like, they made a joke and called it a NAS truck. Then someone all of a sudden got the idea of, hey, this might actually be something. Now, I painted the Chisholm Suspension NAS truck. And we made jokes about it. It was badass. Don't get me wrong. We were all thinking, this is the coolest truck. It's the stupidest truck. Uh-huh. If you're really talking about a practical truck. But we're just laughing about it because, dude, they're never going to have a NAS truck series.
Right.
But
yeah,
we just laughed about it.
All these years later.
So when all of a sudden we started noticing, they started doing like a little bit of the NAS truck. You know, NAS truck started. They did kind of like an exhibition race. And next thing you know, they're talking about it. Me and Dion were making jokes. I was saying, well, if they're going to do this, they're going to have a mini truck class. So we built the cage and all this stuff on The Last Look to make it look like a mini NAS truck at first,
oh,
you know, the way
nice.
We were doing it.
That's how it came
and
about.
And that's how that whole front end looked, that whole, you know, that big scoop on the front hood and all that, you know, that original, the look of it was, you know, we're going to have the first mini NAS truck. And it's kind of funny. They never did. I mean, mini trucks kind of stopped in 98 when everything happened. You know, now today is a mini truck's a mid-sized truck.
Yep.
But there's it never took off. They never did a mini truck series. But we did. We had The Last Look, and it was all yellow because Dion liked that color. We didn't know what to really do on it. And Dion's like, give me three renderings. So I remember doing these three. I really went all out to just do the craziest render, and they were full color, and I usually don't do color renderings, right?
Sick.
I used to do black and whites, and so I did three full color renderings, and the one he picked was The Last Look. And then later on, there was a guy named, I don't know if you remember John Lotto.
I don't remember that name.
2L. He had a full size Chevy truck that was yellow with like some crazy graphics on it. It being sold to the Japanese. He had these big 20, back
like
then,
Budniks or now?
Big 20 inch spokes. No. He had 20-inch, like, L.A. wire wheels on it.
Okay.
And they were, like, crazy looking. But it was at SEMA a while back. But that was a modified version of the second drawing. And I can't remember off the top of my head where the third one went to. I mean, Dion has them all. But
yeah,
that's how it started. We never intended The Last Look to be The Last Look. It was actually, I'll give you one of the funny stories about it is we always had a good relationship. It was a very competitive relationship with Eric Coleman from the Color Shop.
Okay.
Color Shop and Cal Concept, we were always, and Coleman used to work for Dion back in the day. Coleman got his start at Cal Concepts originally before he started the Color Shop.
Got it.
He had a car club called Mag Material, and he would do his stuff on the side, and then he worked for Dion for a while, left, and started Color Shop.
Okay.
And so we were always very competitive with him, and people always thought it was very vicious. And it was kind of funny. Everyone thought it was really mean-spirited, but we would actually just talk smack to each other all the time. Well, there was this one thing where Coleman was going to beat Dion at this way. We'll see you at, I think it was Truck Jam. and I'm going to build this car. It's going to blow you away. And Dion's like, well, I'm going to build the shop truck. He goes, I'm going to take our shop truck and blow you away. And he's like, and then so they had a running joke on whoever would do the best, whoever won. And it wasn't the best of show. It was the best paint. We could care less about best
right,
of show.
Right.
So whoever won best paint at that at Truck Jam, I think it was, would have bragging rights. And they were like defining what bragging rights was. And Dion's like, you can call me at 3 a.m. and say, who's the man? And I'll say, you are. And Coleman's like, okay. He goes, well, I'm going to have five trucks there. And Dion goes, you only need one. And that's, that was the beginning, the reason for The Last Look actually being a little bit over the top. Nothing to do with it being an icon in the industry. It was just fun. And it was not to really get back at Eric at all. It was funny because of that little competition, the head of you truck, Sean Dell's truck,
yes,
was the answer to The Last Look. Because of this little, not bickering, but because of this competitive element, you've got one of the other most iconic trucks in the industry, Sean Dell is ahead of you, which is also the only, or at least the first mini truck to ever be on, you know, be fully lifted four-wheel drive and body drop.
Yes, I know. And I remember when he did that.
And one of the paint jobs that I, you know, if I had to give out the top 10 paint jobs in the mini truck industry, in my opinion, well, in the top five would be the head of you truck, you know, Coleman's paint job. So all of this stuff, none of it was intended. I guarantee when Sean built the first, you know, Sean Dell did and his dad built the head of you truck or I don't think it was called people called it graphic violence. Oh, it was nicknamed as Sideshow
because
of the magazine, but it was always called the head of you truck. Yeah. The graphic violence truck was the coolest name ever. That was, Richard Jasmine's truck that Coleman did, and that's another great truck. But none of these were intended to be what they became. They were just done for fun. Back then, that was fun. It was the smack talk was part of the culture.
That's so sick.
If you weren't doing little versions, like little, you know, I used to do little cartoons of other painters and our paint jobs, and I had people like get mad about that. But it's like, dude, that's what we did. It was like, you know, people would talk smack. It was a running joke. Don't mess with Craig. He'll put you in a mural. but I put myself in a mural. I put all of us in our shop was in a mural at any given time. So that was part of the fun of it. And, you know, when people talk about, well, whatever happened to the industry, I go, what happens to every industry? You know, it grows up. It gets tiring. I go, you know, it's like a great joke. If you say it over and over again, it's not great anymore. But a good comedian has more than one joke. So you always want to keep changing up and doing something different. You know, I don't look back and I'm not sad about the matrix industry not being, you'll see it permeated in different versions. You're seeing a lot of the full size trucks, a lot of the trucks nowadays are kind of going back to that roots. You know, they're not the same thing, but you don't want the same thing. You want to be different.
Exactly. And what's funny is I got to look back and see what mini trucking it was, but I remember when they were doing, when Sean Carlson was doing the tech articles for the bagging Last Look. And for some reason, maybe it was because it wasn't the, you know, all color pages back then. It seemed like it was white or maybe it was primer. But I remember that. And then when you think about, to your point, you know, where it came from and then where it's at now with Fester kind of being, you know, over that truck and kind of overseeing it, it's just amazing. But one question that I had for you, because I saw the truck years ago when some crazy 4x4 shop in the East Coast owned it before Fester got his hands on it, which was probably the best thing that happened to it. The question I have is, you know, the paint obviously blew me away. And I remember looking in, you see the little guys holding the, like where the fire guys, you know, there's the guy on the inside of the roof that was going to like jump. Mm-hmm. And then there's the guy on the floor. But is there, you know, a lot of guys know a lot of facts about the truck, right? Because it went down in history. But is there any one other thing maybe that people don't know about the inside the paint specifically?
I've told these stories so many times, there's not anymore.
If it wasn't
If it wasn't for the internet, I could say, yeah, because not everyone reads it. But there's stories out there that I've had people tell me about the hood mural that I'm listening to, and that's not what I put in the mural, but I like their story better than mine.
Right.
So I'm like, you know something? I'm going to use that because it makes me look so much more clever and Machiavellian, but I'm not that, you know, I'm not that much of a Moriarty character. I don't think that far in advance. There's no, you know, Nostradamus predictions in the
hood mural.
We always talk about the little guys, and the little guys were infamous. They were always in trouble, always in mischief, always causing problems. It was either It was either back in the day, it was me, Dion, and K-Daddy with little guys, or later on it became me, Dion, and Nino Brown, or me, Dion, and Lambie, and that's the way it is now. The main core little guys are always me and Dion and someone else causing problems. And there's a couple of different little guys throughout the truck, and there was one where they were all holding like a little like a fire thing where they're trying to catch somebody, and you know, and there's guys climbing up on the roll cage, and like one of them jumped, and they're all holding that net, uh-huh. But the guy is like 2-3 feet to the right of the net, just on the ground, blam, like he missed yeah. completely, and he's got a spray gun in his hand, and that was Coleman, and Coleman knew it, and he was like, he liked it. He was like, yeah, I missed. I go, yeah, you did miss, because he didn't. Not only did he at the one show we went to, he didn't have any of his trucks ready, so it's kind of funny. He didn't even bring one.
So see, that's cool because a lot of the East Coast guys may not know that story, so that's cool.
Yeah. And then the thing is that if you see all the Japanese lettering throughout it, and there were some different ones, there was a stereo that was added in to the back of it later on. But before that, there was a lot of carbon fiber panels we did on that. And they always had a lot of kanji written throughout it. And this is before the internet. So as far as the accuracy on that, probably about as accurate as half the people's kanji tattoos on the back of their head.
Right.
You know, I did the best I could, but we had an inside lead on a company in Japan that wanted to buy the truck.
Okay.
And so we were very stoked. It was the company Iwata, and the company that manufactures the spray guns that I use. And they were very interested in having that truck on this, you know, buying it, having it permanently on display in their showroom in Yokohama, Japan. We were stoked. We're like, oh, that would be the best. So this is you know, we had heard about this early on. So when we were painting it, we're like, let's, you know, they're saying that this thing's going to be really cool. We'd like one of your trucks. And Dion's like, we need to make it this truck. So I put a lot of kanji things in there that had to do with, you know, Japanese lettering. And they're just not just because it was, you know, a Toyota Japanese truck, but because we were trying to really, really cater to the Japanese.
Right.
And, and the deal fell through because it was like a different, the person that was interested in it ended up leaving the company, whatever. So it never happened.
Sure.
But that was something a lot of people don't know, that we were fully intended on. When we built that truck, we were going to show it for about 1 or 2 years and then sell it and go from there. And a lot of people also don't know about the bike. There was a 85 Ninja 600 that was painted to match that used to travel with the, and we keep on teasing Fester. It's like, if you want the bike, and Fester's all like, I want the bike. Where is it? Oh, yeah. You have to really want
$100 million.
We've got a line. No, it's not that at all, but we basically are teasing Fester with Fester will probably end up getting it eventually,
right.
But we had the bike and the bike was called the Eliminator. And it was along with the last look, and it just had the big letter E and then a dash Eliminator. And that was also a running joke, because Eric's nickname was E, Eric Coleman. And so there was that kind of stuff all the time. Like the Ahead of You truck, supposedly in the original mural version, the chick holding the head was originally my head.
Ah.
And then he changed it, and I was like bummed. And they're like, "Well," I was kind of like, "No, come on, you won't play." I mean, because the thing is I had probably put Coleman in a half a dozen paint jobs, and he would get mad about it, but he liked it. It was funny because he had to understand Coleman's sense of humor. It was pretty twisted.
Yeah.
And so that whole thing that was the industry. That's what we did. You know, people would always like, "Oh, stop being juvenile." No, it's mini trucking. Come on.
It's fun. Freaking rules in mini trucking. I mean,
there's no rules in mini trucking. That's like, mini trucking is probably one of the most, in my opinion, socially acceptable forms of anarchy that I've been directly a part of.
For sure. And it's funny because on episode 38 that we're getting ready to drop, we have an old school mini trucker from South Florida, and we talk about that. We say, hey, there's no rules in mini trucking because you can do whatever you want to do. If you want to put your truck logo in the paint, you do it, you know? So it's pretty cool. Now, also kind of thinking of, you know,
first rule of mini trucking, there are no rules in mini trucking.
Exactly. That's the bumper sticker we need. What I think is awesome is, one, you know, you're in the Mini Truck Hall of Fame, so congrats. And then Last Look is as well. I think those two are like our icing on the cake for, you know, the Cal Concept crew and yourself. And then, of course,
Cal Concept's Cal Concepts is also inducted.
Oh, yep, you're so, right. Yep, got it. And I should have mentioned that too. And to me, those three, that's the trifecta. It's like, it's got to be because, you know, a lot of guys, you know, and here's the thing, you know, I'm at an age in my life. You're at a good age. You know, we're not old by any means, but there's a lot of like the newer generation that's coming in, and they haven't heard these stories. And for me, even I haven't heard a lot of this. And to me, you have to know where your hobby, you know some of those roots, man, because like these trucks will go down, and they have already went down in history. So I love what the whole Mini Truck Hall of Fame is doing. I know some people, you know, not everybody wants that kind of recognition, but to me, it's great that our industry or our scene, that we have that as an outlet, you know?
No, I was very happy when Bob Hayes, you know, put together, and I have to give, you know, the majority credits to Bob Hayes. That is a true, you know, point of passion with his is the Mini Trucking Hall of Fame. And he's put as much work, as much sweat, and lost as much stomach lining running that Hall of Fame as he did running Rezzo, which I still will say is the ultimate, you know, show of all time. People may argue with me, but I'm sorry. I love Rezzo back in the day. Mm-hmm. And so I give a lot of credit with him on that. The thing is that it's kind of interesting dichotomy. You got the new guys coming in. And you can, you know, and it's good that they've got, that they can study the history, you can see about it, but you can't shove it down their throats because the whole concept is, think about the way mini trucking started. It was a bunch of guys that weren't going to listen to the old hot rod guys or weren't going to listen to the old race car guys. They were going to do something that was just completely ridiculous. They were going to take these mini trucks and make them so untruckable. And it just, no one expected it. It's like, you know, when it came out, I remember there was a guy, you have to go way back in mini trucking to find him. And he was my neighbor, name was Mike Kitchen, and he had a truck called Tilt. And it was an old Hilux. And it had a tilt bed and molded rear tailgate. And it was painted by the Beam Brothers, and it was lowered, and it was back when Zolotone was really bitching, and he had color map Zolotone in his bed, and we just thought he was the weird. And of course, back then, this is back in the early 80s, I had a 68 Camaro SS396, and all I cared about was street racing. So I that's what I was into, was my 68 Camaro and racing. And then he's got this mini truck, and I remember just being completely baffled. It was cool, but I remember thinking, you know, I had my primered Camaro, which is completely ironic if what I do now, and I had a primered Camaro. And then he had that. And I remember thinking, that's never going to take off. And I was so complete. You know, at that time, I'm thinking service center and you know, super shops and 68 Camaros, that's going to be here forever. Nope.
Right.
But you know something? There is a heck of a lot more longevity with and creativity when it came to mini trucking. But when I first seen his truck, and that was way before anyone else was really doing it. And we're talking, this is probably 82, 83. Mm-hmm. And I mean, there was people doing it, but before it was a scene that you really knew much about. And it gets back to that whole thing. You don't know. You know, nobody knew what was going to happen. You know, nobody knew what was going to take off and what wasn't. You know, look at the amount of trucks that money was put into. I remember there was a truck that we competed against with the last look, and this guy had about 50 or 60 grand in this truck. I can't remember the name of it. It was a peach-colored truck, and the chrome was it was an amazing truck. And Dion would probably know the names. He's better with names than I am.
Yeah.
But you have to realize that we had, of course, we did all the work on last look. We did all the paint work, all the fabrication, everything on it. A lot of it was found merch. A lot of it was fabricated.
Mm-hmm.
But the amount of money that was put into that truck was like between $2,500 and $3,000. That was it. That's how much money was in that truck.
Sick.
That's how much we put into it. That truck was built with that. If you looked in Truck and Magazine, we did a dually that was the entire dually was under 10 grand. And then and they were talking about these under 10 builds. Well, we topped it by finding a salvage title dually and customizing it and painting it and lowering it and putting wheels on it and full custom paint job, interior and stereo, everything, including buying the truck for under 10. And at that Mind point blown. In time, we were always like, that was, you know, you can throw money at something. And I've got a healthy respect for that. I love seeing something where a lot of money has been spent on, but that doesn't guarantee you anything. And And all it is you really, really, you know, wondering if you're ever going to get a return on your investment. Now, if you really figure out how many hours did we have in the last look, I don't want to know. That'd be that'd be even more depressing than that guy with the 60 grand in his Mini. So, you know, when Dion sold the last look, he actually got a very good price for it. And I believe he sold it and also partial trade. He traded it and sold it for like, it was a convertible. Oh, what was that? It was like a convertible 56 Chevy or something like that. And then money. And it was kind of bizarre. And that's literally from that point, we almost kind of started going into customs more.
Gotcha.
You know, we would always do the Minis. We never left Minis. That was one thing we kept doing them on a regular basis. And, we've got you've probably seen the Carl's the Star Wars truck.
I was going to bring that up. Oh, yeah. That truck is sick.
And Corey's recent truck that we just finished not too long ago. I can't remember his last name. I'm making some terrible names. But with Carl's truck, Carl's truck's actually going to be at SEMA this year for Iwata. So it's kind of cool. But he was invited to Oakland Motor Show with that from that. And then that's a perfect example of, you know, people say, oh, what's Cal Concepts doing? There's something they could do. You're not doing Mini trucks anymore. Yeah, we are.
Yeah. And was that the Toyota?
Which one? Was that Corey's? Burgundy one? The Burgundy one.
Yeah. I was thinking because there's one that I've seen out there that almost looks like, I guess in photos, like a silver and a black with some the crazy Cal Concepts on it.
Oh, no. That's a different one. That one used to be a crazy-ass green color.
Oh, yeah. And then I'm looking at it now. Yeah. Yep. So I know the other one.
It's black. It's all monochromatic. Yeah. I like that one. That one hasn't really hit the scene. I think he's shown it a few times, but That thing's not really been seen that much. It's not in the magazine yet.
That one's
and then
sick.
We did, yeah.
Yeah, and I see the other one.
There's a lot of trucks,
and
there's some trucks that never quite ever made it in the magazine that we did, you know, and that's fine. Back in the day, there was trucks we did that never quite made the magazine.
Exactly.
And then there's a few that are, you know, gone, and then there's, you know, Tommy Leyendecker's old truck, Something Wicked This Way Comes, which used to be Cobb's Ninja truck, which before that was the Gecko truck painted by Coleman. So this truck was actually in the magazine three different times, two times with one owner, a third time as Something Wicked This Way Comes, which is also the very first time we ever did a step-by-step video, was on the orange, the Mazda.
That's sick. So, I love that truck. And I wanted to bring that one up. And it's funny because when I first got into Mini trucking, I was buying stuff from Steve at Altered Images. And Steve, you know, back then he would film all kinds of stuff. And I swear he went in on the video, the VHS tape, there's a part where he goes somewhere and that truck was on a trailer and somebody goes, yeah, you can go check it out. And he opens the door and he's filming. And it was crazy because back then, you know, like you said earlier, there wasn't the internet that there is today. So to have some, you know, I call truck smut smuggled from the West Coast to the East Coast, I mean, it was freaking badass, you know. But I did want to mention, so, you know, you talked a lot about the history of these different trucks. Now, you'd also brought up Sean Carlson's name, so rest in peace. I've even had a family member reach out to me because I always hashtag his name. But, you know, he was an innovator, much like Cal Concepts and Air Syndicate. Now, Cal Concepts, of course, painted Woodrunner. Can you share anything about the paint job, you know, and kind of the experience that you had with Sean back then?
Woodrunner was kind of funny because we would always tease Sean about that thing. It was at a paint shop. It was at another paint shop for a long time, and it sat outside half done, and Sean finally brought it to us, and we couldn't save the paint job that was started on it. So we just stripped it and started all over again on it. But it was one of our first sponsored vehicles from House of Color.
Okay.
House of Color wasn't interested in sponsoring Mini trucks. They weren't interested in Mini trucks, but we got that sponsored, and we even have a little character of John Kosmoski was on the back of it because it was our first fully sponsored House of Color job. Before that, we used to use a combination of House of Color and PPG. At that point, we went full-blown House of Color.
Okay.
So we really wanted to showcase the House of Color paint, and we went nuts on that truck. And then it sat.
Yes, I remember that. It was like in storage or something.
And we would always tease them it to the point where that paint job was done before – the last look.
Wow, I did not know that.
The last look. It was finished more than a year before the last look.
That's sick. And, I did not know that.
Yeah, and so we'd always tease him about, hey, when's the 400 going to come out? And to the point where it would pop up in mag. I remember seeing it at SEMA, and I'm looking at it, and I'm like, you limo tinted the windows, so there's nothing inside that.
Right, and it was funny because when I was
first but it looked amazing.
Yeah,
but
and people were amazing, talking about the motor swap. I mean, even on the East Coast, it was weird how knowledge kind of made its way back before the internet. And when I went to Indy Truck Bash like 02, 03, that's when it had already made its pilgrimage over kind of the East Coast, which I guess you could almost say the start of the demise of it. But it was awesome because I took a lot of photos on film of it there because I was just like, wow, this truck is here. And I forget, somebody in like Indiana owned it, and I know a lot of stuff had really transpired. But to your point with the characters and whatnot, I mean, it was really neat to see that, man, because that paint job still to this day is just mind-blowing to me.
Yeah.
So.
And but also with Son Carlson, we also painted his Mitsubishi, the wagon, the turbo one that he did, and we also did a number of
Ford Focus, right?
The Ford Focus that was we did it until it was sponsored by, I can't remember who sponsored it, and then of course they had to change the paint job. But before that, we also worked on people forget Jason Whitfield's what was it called again? It was the Honda that was at the time the world's fastest Honda at one point.
Gotcha.
Stefan had it, and it was all done like biomechanical stuff. Killing Time. No, not Killing Time. No, Killing Time was that truck. It was something else. It was Something Time.
Yeah, and
man,
what
I can't believe I forgot it. That's
I mean, dude, you showed some awesome memory this whole entire interview, and we do have a couple more questions, and then we'll kind of wrap it up. But to me, there's a cover that I had, and I forget if I went to Nopi back. We used to go there, drive up from Tampa, and Sean was
on
there.
That Honda was on the cover of, there was the Nopi issue of the, I think, I can't remember which one of the.
Yeah,
the
it may have been.
Magazines or
and
something.
Maybe racing, that's where
Turbo,
I remember.
Turbo magazine. Yeah, I think it was on Turbo.
And then the Ford Focus, I have that issue. And it was funny because I took a picture. My buddy goes, oh, there's Sean right there. And of course, I never knew him or anything like that, but he was being interviewed. It was early 2000s, and I took a photo of him. And it really, I looked at him, and you could just see how genuine of a guy he was. But that Ford Focus, to your point, I remember it when it was it had the carbon fiber look of it, but you could tell it had, I think that's when you guys painted the, you could tell the cow concept, piece of it as well.
Yeah. Yeah. We want to keep as much of the carbon fiber as possible, but there was a lot of modifications done to the body that made some of the carbon kind of ugly and kind of messed up and had to be body worked. And so we strategically placed the graphics and to cover up and to show as much of the carbon fiber as possible. And I believe the only time that was really shown was SEMA. And then a couple of months after that, at a couple of runs and races, and then as soon as he picked up whoever's his major sponsor at the time, and then it was instant McGuire's. I think it was McGuire. Yeah, then all of a sudden after that, it was a McGuire's wrap over the whole car.
Yeah.
So.
Because,
But I don't blame him. But everyone's all, aren't you mad? I'm like, no. I'm very happy for Sean. He's kicking butt. So, same thing with us and Leah Pruitt. You see her all of a sudden now with all of the Papa John's pizza ads, and we did all of her original cars, her A-altered, her funny car, all of her cars back in the day. She used to we painted her junior dragsters back when she was junior dragster racing. So we were affiliated with Leia back when, as early, I think she was like 12 or something. We started painting her junior dragsters and stuff. And so we were doing, and then we did all of her car, her A-altered and stuff for her dad and then her. And then, they had a double duty where they actually had two bodies who would swap on the same car to race different categories, A altered and then funny car. They would just swap out the bodies. And, back when they were all self-sponsored. And then she went on from there to just kind of here. And then she lost her main sponsor for a while and then hooked up with Papa John's. And then she's been going insane.
Insane.
She's right up there name-wise, right up there with Jesse James's wife with the Patron funny car. They're different classes, but honestly, they're getting about the same amount of airtime right now. Leia's doing really good. Real proud of her.
Yeah, I'm gonna look her up, man. That's cool. I appreciate you sharing that. Now, one of my favorite covers, favorite trucks of all times, is the stunning Cow Concepts paint job, of course, and it's Mike Kaufman's full size that was on the inaugural issue, or I should say, the first issue of Street Trucks. I mean, what a classic truck. Yeah. And in the year that it was at SEMA, I mentioned Steve from Altered Images. He was also, you know, he had the video camera then, and he had some, and it was on video, and we're like, oh my gosh, we got a SEMA video here, and, you know, in Florida, it was crazy. But what can you tell us about that truck? I mean, I've heard, we've heard rumors that the truck got totaled and whatnot, but what a beautiful paint job, man.
Thank you. That was a very, very House of Color sponsored paint job. It had a huge House of Color scarab in the back, and a lot of people never saw it. I go, some of the coolest part, but I mean, I love the graphics on it, of course, but I love that wheel in the back.
Yes,
of the bed
inset
as well,
in the bed.
It was sunken in there. The whole truck was just done really, really nicely. And I'm trying to remember who did all the custom work on it, all the original, or built the truck itself. I forget. Was it our customs?
Was it our customs? Yeah, I'll have to look it up because I remember.
I feel bad if I'm giving someone the wrong credit.
I'll look it up.
Kaufman, I had done Kaufman's Honda before, the Final Solution Honda with all the murals on it. So I had known Mike for years, going way back with he was, you know, of course, one of the founding original members with Syndicate Minis and Compacts.
Oh,
so
really?
He's one of the original guys back in the day, and when he was doing that truck, and we were all stoked because he put some money in that truck, and it was nice, and the stereo was just killer, and it was just a great all-around truck. He showed the heck out of that thing. I'm not exactly sure. I'm pretty sure he either sold it or it was in the process of being sold, but it had gotten in a small accident, and then and I heard he had done some repairs on it, and then I heard it was in a bigger accident. So I didn't know because I wasn't directly involved with it, and uh-huh. I hadn't done the repair. What minor repairs happened on it, I didn't do them. Same way I didn't do any of the restoration work on the last look. That was done by Fester's guy. Talked to him a few times, but besides that, the end of that. From what I understand, the truck no longer exists. It's sad, but, you know, that's what happens. There's a lot of trucks out there that, no, I mean, look at the 4Runner. The 4Runner was brought back.
Yeah.
But you've seen the picture of the 4Runner upside down with the trailer.
Yes, I have.
So there's a lot of great vehicles that got in accidents and then never were brought back. And then in the 4Runner case, I'm waiting. I've talked to the guy every now and then and about repainting it or doing the graphics on it again because he's got that blown motor in it now.
Yes.
And it's freaking psycho. I've talked to Sean Dell. Have you seen pictures of Sean's of the ahead of you truck, what they've done to it?
Well, okay, so I've seen in the mini truck, and where are they now? I think it came up because doesn't he have the hood on his garage wall, I believe? I'm trying to think if that's the
same. Well, he has got the hood on there. I'm talking about the truck. The truck has been totally redone.
No, I haven't seen it.
Oh, yeah, it's and from what I understand, he's still – and I was actually talking with him, and we were discussing on the repaint. We'd even talked about, you know, because at that time I was, Coleman was doing something different I was even talking with Coleman. Hey, I would be totally honored to work with you on restoring the paint job on that. And we always were talking about it, but the truck wasn't ready at that time. And then Coleman passed away. No one really talked about it, but I've thrown out there is like, I'd be more than happy to work on that truck. Cause I view that truck as being part of mini trucking history. It's cool to see those things come back. Same way, there's someone in Bakersfield that owns Tommy Leyendecker's truck. I haven't seen it in a while, but the last time I saw it was going across the intersection, some girl driving it. You know, the Something Wicked This Way Comes truck.
It's
somewhere.
Wow.
And I saw it driving by, and it looked fine. I mean, the chick that was driving it railed, you know, had it slammed and railed across the intersection, blowing sparks, which I dig. Most people will be like, oh, my gosh, you ruined the truck. I'm like, no, that's the way you drive it. And
that's crazy.
But that truck was meant to be driven. It was, you know, it was pretty, but on the underside, that thing was scraped. But I hadn't seen it. I haven't seen it in probably 6 or 7 years. But the last I heard, it was in town here. So it might turn up. I know Fester. Tell it to Fester. He'll just hawk his house to buy that stuff. Because that's like the missing. That's like the missing trophy on his wall. He just stares at that space.
I talked to Fester the last couple of days on Instagram, and yeah, I we were jabbering back and forth, and you know, but I mean, yeah, his wife would kill him. Oh, that's good stuff.
I'm actually surprised. His wife threatened to kill him 3 trucks ago.
Right.
So
yeah.
I think it's hollow. I think it's a hollow threat. I think she really likes the trucks.
Yep.
Or she did kill Fester, and that's just a muppet that we see pop up every now and then. You know?
Yeah, man, that's awesome. Well, I did want to kind of ask a couple more questions before, because, I mean, you've been very, very nice here with the time, so I appreciate it. But kind of getting back to the
art. Oh, and also really quick, yeah. if I left anybody out or I screwed up a name, hey, dude, I'm old, lots of paint fumes.
No, yeah,
and,
yeah, yeah.
And way too much Purple Jesus at mini truck runs. over time, you know. Tends to wear a little thin.
Dude, you're an OG, so it's fine. So, like, you've worked with a long list of clients that I mentioned on your website earlier. Yeah. And what I noticed was, I think it was Mike Jr.'s piece for Papa Doobies. What piece, like, if you think back, like, so I know this question is not going to be easy, but if you think back to all the custom pieces that you've done for whether it be a high-end client or a mini truck, like, what's your most memorable thing that you've done as far as, like, artwork?
Huh. That's a tough one, because, it was when I think back on, like, the pinnacle of what I think is, like, my crowning achievement, I don't really have one, because I kind of, it depends on this topic you're talking about. I have to look at like, what I've done for Disney.
Gotcha.
You know, with doing a painting for the 50th anniversary of Pirates of the Caribbean. That's
sick.
Like, boom, you know, and then at the same time doing a Boba Fett painting for Lucasfilm.
Right.
You know, knowing that my painting went across the table at Lucas, you know, me working on, and, you know, there's so many different milestones of painting, you know, back we painted for Jesse James for about 3 or 4 years, and the paint jobs we did for him, the stuff I've done 3 of the hubless bikes for Billy Lane. Back
oh,
in the day,
wow, I didn't
him.
Realize that. Wow.
I've worked for Arlen Ness. We painted one of our biggest things. We actually painted John Kosmoski's bike, Superstition, which John Kosmoski doesn't let anyone paint his bike because he's a great painter. And we did his actual bike, and which was also a Jesse James built bike. So that was, you know, there's a lot of different things out there that I'd have to say are like these great pinnacles, these great crowning achievements, you could say. And it's tough to pick just one. You know, a lot of the vehicles that I did, a lot of the concept design work for Doug DeBerti that were in the Ford booth at the years at SEMA, like the big tank truck, that was started as a concept rendering. It was a joke. And all of a sudden, he built the damn thing. And then some of the other vehicles that we've done, there's not one. Because to have one crowning achievement means you're going to go downhill from there. And it means you spent most of your life planning that one. That's not the way I've ever been. I always just kind of like there's different opportunities, and I'll do one thing. I'm like, man, that's like really cool. I had a painting that was purchased 2 years ago by James Wan, the director. He's the guy that did Insidious and The Conjuring, as well as Saw. And he's doing the new Aquaman right now down in Australia. He bought one of my paintings, and I remember just being geeked out on that because, you know, that was just cool. But then that was eclipsed by, you know, someone else buying something else. So it's really tough to say. Doing
sick.
The piece for Michael Hossack Jr., Michael Jr., who was the son of Big Mike, the drummer from the Doobie Brothers, that Papa Doobie piece, that was very cool. It was a memorial piece for his dad, but it's also a corporate piece for him because he's got that company. So I was stoked getting to meet him. He's a really great guy. And I got to meet him through my contact up in Northern California, who hooked me up with Guy Fieri, one of my big clients. I do like I've done 8 or 9 restaurants for Guy Fieri in the last 2 years. I just got back from South Africa, where I did a restaurant for him in Pretoria, South Africa. Did one down in Cancun and Playa del Carmen, Mexico, and I've done them across the country as well as in Vegas. If, by the way, when it goes to Vegas, you got to check out Guy's the Burro Borracho restaurant, the Rio, or his kitchen at the Link. And working for Guy Fieri, painting his cars, but also doing wall murals for him and doing a fine art for him has been a great thing as well. So because of that contact with Guy Fieri, through one of my students that works for Guy, that guy also is a lifelong friend of Michael Hossack. So it just, these things happen. You can't plan it.
Yes.
And I recently have something that if anyone wants to follow me on Instagram, it's at Von Fraser. VonFraser, and that's my personal Instagram. You can also check out CraigFraserStudios.com, which is my business side Instagram, as well as my website and my Facebook. And I have a thing called Quote in 60, and where I just have 60 seconds and I mention a quote and I describe it. And I talked recently about opportunities don't knock just once; they continually knock on an infinite number of doors. The problem is most people are so afraid of failure that they won't answer the knock and start working. And that's the key. If you ever shoot for just one target and you miss it, then you missed it. But if you pay attention, there are targets of opportunity everywhere, which means as long as you know, I may go for something, but if I miss, it's close enough for me to do something else with it as well. I've had vehicles, I've had projects, I've had plans that didn't quite do well, but I was able to keep the momentum going and put it in this and move it over to this area, and all of a sudden people lost their mind with it and it did really well over there. I never view it as a failure. All successes are based on failure. If you succeed without failing, you either copied someone else, it's not your true success, or you were lucky. Because when it comes down to it, that's the definition of success, is pushing through failure until it actually, you know, becomes a success. True failure is when you just stop. You give up. And then that is the black hole of failure. That is. And that's what I tell people. I go, there's so many people like, oh, I'm afraid of failure. I go, are you afraid of success? And people say, that's stupid. A lot of people are afraid of success. It's not that they're afraid of success. They're afraid of failure. And because of that, they'll actually not even try something. And they'll never admit to it. It's totally subconscious. You've got to go after it. I'm not saying search out and cause failure. You know, that's just being stupid. But you should fail at something. As an artist, if you don't fail on a daily basis, you are failing as an innovative, creative individual. Yeah. Because you're not pushing the envelope. You're not trying hard enough. You're doing the same thing over and over again.
That's, you know,
if you do something, you don't make a mistake, pat yourself on the back. Congratulations. You've done it before, or you're lucky.
Boom.
But that's the whole thing. You've got to push the failure. And that's the reason there are last looks. And that's the reason there are, you know, ahead of yous. That's the reason there are, you know, something wicked this way comes. That's the reason that there are these milestones in any industry, especially in the mini trucking industry, that, you know, Sean Carlson was not afraid of failing. You know, he didn't think, well, I can't build a race car for Ford in my parents' garage. No, when Ford came over, he was actually having to move his sister's bicycle out of the way to show them the car in his parents' garage that was blowing away all of these major design dudes and these major engineering geniuses. And he was blowing them away, you know, in his parents' garage. Most people would see like, oh, I can't do anything until I've got a bitchin' shop with urethane floors and an office. No, that's all secondary. That's like the covers. That's not what you're going for. That happens. And if it does, say thank you, be polite, be appreciative, and go on. Otherwise, you can fail by actually embracing your successes and holding on to them too long.
Man, this is true advice, man, from an OG. I mean, I'm telling you, we could bottle this and sell it, Craig. I'm telling you. No, but it's great advice, man. It's not just for the enthusiast, man, but one thing on the podcast, we try to bring positive energy, and these are things that can help you, no doubt, in your career, starting a business, things like that. So, I mean, listen, I love to motivate people. Music motivates me. But I'm telling you, this hour and a half has just, man, I'm like ready to start a business, man. I really got an awesome high from this. I really do. I do want to mention before we end here that, of course, you know, we mentioned NR Carl from No Regrets, his S10 with the Star Wars theme, insane. That was on the cover of Grindr TV, so our friend Brian. And then also a good friend of ours, we've had her on before, Holly from Forbidden Fantasy. We love her Nissan that you guys painted, the full-size extended cab. She drove that to Slamfest, which is right here in our backyard in Tampa.
She's prolific with that truck. She drives the heck out of her truck. She's a real mini trucker, even though that's not quite – it's not quite mini. Yeah, she embodies the effort. You know, it's like that's the nice thing about mini trucks. There's not too much trailer trash. When, you know, the only reason we trailered the last look around is because you can barely fit two people in it. You know,
yeah.
I remember people saying it didn't. People at SEMA were making, when they first saw it at SEMA when we had it there, they were making jokes like, "Well, that thing doesn't run." And then Dion just did like a standing smoke show down the street with it. It was just so freaking killer. But
that's cool,
it was a lot of, you know, that's a great thing about it is that I think out of any custom industry or out of any automotive industry out there, I believe mini trucking was always the most real when it came to like this was built by this person, or if not, at least it runs. There always is a trailer trash in every single group, but it always seemed Minchukin was always more legit to me. And of course, you know, in house at our shop, we have Lambie, who is the embodiment of Minchukin. He's like our guru. He actually has a museum in his garage at his house that's got bits and pieces and parts of long lost mini trucks. Not to mention all of my old patterns for all the mini truck windows I ever did, which I think is about 50 different club window patterns he has. And he's the owner of Pinky, which has been in the magazine numerous times.
Now, that's a lifted truck, right?
Yeah. No. Pinky is he has a lifted 4Runner that's all graphiced up, but Pinky is the slammed Tacoma.
Okay. Tacoma. I gotcha. Okay.
With the leopard print. The leopard print and the flames.
Okay. Yeah, I'm going to have to look that one back up.
We've had it at SEMA. Yeah. We've had it at SEMA a few times, and he's been a member of Freaks of Nature for a while, but before that, he was I lose track of him.
Yeah, no, I got you. Well, listen, I added you on Facebook, and I just want to say, I mean, it's easy to say this with each interview, but I mean, it's really been probably my favorite interview that I've done. No disrespect to everyone else. I mean, we've had Courtney's mom on. What a wonderful woman, Maggie, that she is. Mm-hmm. And we've had Jeff Davey and Sean Mahaney and so many others. But, you know, to really the candor that you have, and like I said, I slapped hands with you at SEMA, and you know, you weren't, hey, I'm above this guy who's this, you know, jabroni that you know, just reads Matrix. And like, you really, you know, you treated me like an everyday dude, man. And like I said, it took us a little time, but I think you'll be thoroughly impressed how we put this together. And the listeners are going to love it. I'm telling you, they're going to eat it up. And it's
awesome.
I hope so.
And I've had a great time. You had some good questions here. One last thing.
Sure.
I still have my original website out there.
Okay.
I haven't updated it, so don't get butthurt if you look at it. It's not I haven't updated that thing. I don't even know if I have access to it anymore. But it's called it's gotpaint.com.
I remember
now,
that
website.
The ads.
Exactly. Gotpaint.com is still up, and you can go through. There's a lot of pictures in there, a lot of old SEMA coverage, a lot of stuff in there. It takes you a while to go through all of it, but and it's not even been updated for probably 8 years.
Right.
But it's still got a bunch of old stuff, and that website has been up. It's never been down consistently since 1994. So if you think about it, that is probably one of the oldest custom paint websites out there. Because I don't know of anyone that had a custom paint website that was around before 1994 that's still up. I mean, I wrote it back then. I think there's still elements of the beta version of Front Page somewhere in that freaking website.
Yeah, that's crazy. And really quick, because I'm on it right now, I run a page because I'm a huge Dooley fan. You mentioned them earlier, but I run a page called C30 Addict. And recently, you know, like I said, I've got a huge collection of trucking magazines. I was sharing old, you know, tech articles and stuff. And literally, I'm going to have to tag you because I'm going to have to look back, but like, I'm looking at the Dooley, one of the renderings you did back in the day, you know, on this site. So it's, dude, this is great. And I haven't been on this site in a long time. I did used to go to it because last look was obviously, you know, there were some of those got paint, you know, that was in some of the, I think the ads, but I mean, dude, it's been a pleasure. It really has. I feel like I've known you a long time and I think you're a great person. You've got a lot of skills, man. I will definitely say that. But besides what you just shared, was there anything else that you wanted to share with the OLP podcast listeners?
No, just I really appreciate you guys' time and hope I didn't talk too much. I tend to do that, but if anyone ever wants to come by and check out Cal Concepts Air Syndicate or say hi to me on the website, go for it. I'm also at a number of different comic cons and different events, whether it be D23 or like Monster Paloozas, anything that has to do with that kind of stuff. And you can check out. Usually I'll mention it on my website or on my Instagram page, but go ahead and follow me on Instagram, the Von Fraser and our Craig Fraser Studios, and let me know what you think. You know, I'm always trying to do something different, a little bit new, but I know where my roots are. So
for
I
sure.
Have respect for that.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And I'll be back out at SEMA this year. It'll be the third, fourth one I've been to. I know I haven't been to the most. I definitely know that, but I'd love to just sync up with you for a few minutes, you know, get a drink and just, you know, chop it up.
I actually won't be there this SEMA.
I thought you were going to say that.
I know. It's not that I'm avoiding you. No, this is last year was my 25th year at SEMA.
Wow.
And I deserved a break.
Yeah, no,
and
you do.
Literally, And it was, and I was bummed because I've been wanting to get Carl's truck in there for the last 2 years, and then all of a sudden it got in this time. I'm like, ah. But I've got actually another gig. I'm doing another job that's at the exact same time. I'm actually probably not going to be in the country. So,
gotcha.
But yeah, I'm bummed, but
yeah, you'll be fine.
I think, I think 25 years, I think I'm allowed to have a break.
Yeah, man. Well, listen, tell your wife we appreciate the time. I know it's kind of cutting into some family time here. And listen, we'll be in contact. We'll tag you. And if you want to share it, we appreciate that. But listen, man, we got a lot of respect for you, Craig, and we hope you have a great evening, brother.
Thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
Take care, man. Peace out.
Cypress ass, yeah, puro less madre. Yeah, tú sabes, we don't play that shit.